This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 419, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Long as I remember, the rain's been coming down. Clouds of mystery pouring, confusion on the ground. Goodness through the ages, trying to find the sun. And I wonder, still I wonder, who'll stop the rain.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 419. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And sitting in, I was going to go with either one, I went with both. For a vacationing Paul Montgomery is Jim Rutkowski, former iFanboy columnist. How are you, Jim?
I'm on an elliptical right now. I'm neither standing nor sitting.
Perfect. We are, man, I haven't been to the gym in so long. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us reads all their comics, picks the best book they read that week. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that on the podcast along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, all kinds of fun stuff. But it is a review show, so this is your warning and your reminder that there'll be spoilers. So if you haven't read your books, pause the show. Come back when the coast is clear, all the bullets have stopped flying, that kind of thing. Josh.
I want to tell you.
Funny story, Josh. I was convinced I had the pick of the week until you until you tweeted it out asking people. I saw that and went, well, I have it. And I looked up on our little document and went, oh, no, Josh has it. And I was very happy.
What's funny is that I thought, when I write this, Connor's going to give me shit. Because basically, for those of you not following us, on Wednesday I wrote, hey, real quick question, do I have pick of the week? Because I figured somebody out there would tell me. And someone did. They knew. And I thought, oh, Connor's going to give me shit for this. But it wasn't. It was the holidays. It messed everything up. Who can say? Also being messed up is the fact that in the middle of you doing that last bit, and I'm just sitting here looking at the screen, listening to you talk, I thought, oh, I have to talk. So right. I'm pulling up the book now on my digital device,
well, tell them what the title of the book is.
The title of the pick of the week is, I hate these titles, BPRD Hell on Earth, The Reign of the Black Flame, Part 1 of 5.
Wow. Number 115.
Or, yikes. Let's see if it says what it is in the series. It does.
115.
Yeah, there you go. 115.
I was absolutely gobsmacked to read that BPRD was on issue 115.
Yeah, you know, they're it basically comes out as forever. Regularly as any sort of regular monthly book. It's just they keep renaming it or renumbering, although they seem to have stuck with the big number now. What's funny about this is that I feel like this is one of those books that I haven't been reading for that long, but I've probably been reading it for 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah, it's your new Hellblazer.
Yeah.
Could do worse.
And what happened was I started reading it. At that point or whatever. And then after that, I went back and I read like the big omnibus things. And because of that, I have a real hard time knowing when things happened. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if the things in my mind happened like 10 years ago or it was in a recent issue. I don't know. But it kind of doesn't matter. Anyway,
part of that is like Hellboy comes out A, sporadically, and B, out of chronological order.
Yeah, but also Hellboy hasn't been in BPRD for a really long time. I think right. He left the book before I started reading it. So he's not really part of it. He's a presence.
Right.
But I don't think that has so much to do with it. But maybe that it's like sort of subliminally part of it.
If we keep talking about the numbering because it's so exciting for a second, it's interesting to me that, you know, for a long time everyone talked about the Dark Horse model, right? Because Dark Horse would do a series of miniseries for their long-running books. They wouldn't do 115 issues.
Right.
And that idea is finally starting to take hold in the sort of quote-unquote mainstream world. Marvel's sure. basically doing that now.
Right.
Yeah. Although they haven't announced it, every time a creative team changes, they pretty much change the numbering.
I just read the last issue of Fantastic Four this afternoon.
Again.
And yeah, exactly.
But it's funny, is while that's happening, Dark Horse is now flipping
yeah.
to the other side.
Because Dark Horse isn't going to grow. They're like, I guess these are the people we have.
Yeah.
You know, let's just put the number on there and stop fooling ourselves. But they keep adding subtitles.
Right.
So the point being, I actually fallen off this a little bit because if you have been reading this book, I'm going to guess like a year or two ago, the apocalypse basically happened in this world and all the monsters started erupting from the earth and cities are destroyed. And it's a really interesting status quo, but it's kind of grinding because, you know, the BPRD are still around. They've still got their cliffside base in Connecticut somewhere, which doesn't make me think of Connecticut, but whatever. There's hills and there's some smallish mountains, I suppose. And they're all fighting this fight. And at some point, you know, in the last year, Abe Sapien was put into a coma and then he took off. So he's not on the team anymore. And he was really, if you read those sort of big green books, I think there are three or four of them at this point.
Yeah, four,
is there four? Yeah. I only have two. I need to get the rest. Who has time for books? But he's like sort of the main character of the whole thing, and he's not anymore. And then the other thing that happened was that Liz Sherman, never all that stable of a character, lost her shit and sort of took off. And I think she was not well. So she wasn't part of it. So basically, like for a while, the BPRD was Kate Corrigan and Johan, who's the man what's made of gas. And then there was a Russian for a little while. And they're dealing.
Basically, everything I identify with BPRD was not in BPRD.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But if you've been around long enough, you sort of picked up. There are other characters came along. This Phoenix character, Phoenix. She's only died three times. No, just kidding. you know, and you get to meet a couple of the sort of more regular agents who are in there. And I'll be honest, I kind of lose track of them. I don't remember their names, but I sort of recognize their faces, and we meet them. You know, there's this guy with a sword, who picked up this, you know, sword in a cave or something that was sort of an ancient god's weapon or something like that. It's all pretty bleak, and I actually had missed the last issue, and I read it this Wednesday right before I read the new issue because I was like, oh, I'll make sure I read all of them and I'll catch up. And in that last one, basically Liz Sherman got her shit together. Like, she had been in this hospital and she saved the people in it, and she lost her powers. That's what happened. She had there was a big conflict she had with a bad guy. And now she's got her groove back and she's got her powers back a little bit. And at the very end of the last issue, she went back to the headquarters of the BPRD and she's actually doing pretty well. She's got her confidence and she's leading a team and she's back out there. And it was like a really nice way of saying, all right, let's be done with this thing and get this really good character back in things. And so that was the point where I left off just before I started this issue. And what it is, and it took a long time to get there, but that's, I think that's fitting of this title for whatever reason.
Right.
They've decided to invade New York, which has been cut off for over a year since this monster thing came along. And so it's like a really gross version of DMZ because there's monsters and frog people and all that stuff. And nobody's heard anything from anybody in New York since it happened. It's been completely cut off to communications. They can't send boats in. They can't send helicopters over because the monsters always push them back. So they have no idea what's going on there. And they send two small teams in, one from Brooklyn, one from New Jersey.
Hey!
Yeah, and they
oh,
sort
not
of
full of people from Jersey. Full of yeah, that'd be better.
Well, things go bad in the tunnel, Connor.
Well.
And there's a little twist at the end. That's good, but I'm not going to give that part away. But you know, it was really fun to watch them. I guess not feel like they were losing for
right.
the first time in a really, because they've been losing for a long time. Now, don't get me wrong, this was grim. At one point, they go to Prospect Park. And there's bodies everywhere because that's where all the people went to kill themselves.
Oh, God.
And no, it's actually like there's a bunch of silent pages in the middle and they're trying yeah. to figure out why here. And like, why did they all come here? And Johan's like, they didn't want to be alone. So it's like, what everybody else
who is the artist who got to depict this cheerful scene?
You're don't step on my shit.
Oh, sorry.
I'm reading through. There's no writing to go off anymore. So I am making all of this up. That's the great secret. As I'm reading through it, I'm like, this isn't Tyler Crook, who has been the regular artist for the most part. You know, he'll come off and on. He's the guy who did what was the book of the month? I just said
Petrograd.
Petrograd, right? Really great, great replacement for previous artist. Why can't I remember anything? The really amazing Guy Davis.
Gil Hodges, but it's not him.
No, Guy Davis.
Guy Davis.
And I'm reading through this. I'm like, wow, this looks really good. Who is this? And then I get to the end and I flip back to the beginning, and it's James Herron, who is one of my absolute favorite up and coming artists. I think James Herron, he doesn't. A lot of people who are on this book, they tend to ape that Guy Davis style. He doesn't. He does his own thing, but he's done a lot of work in this universe. He's a little closer to him and Ryan Ottley will often sketch stuff together, like they do Gross Monsters and things like that. And he's got a lot of sort of cartoony line work, not like overly rendered line work, but and it's just like there's a monster in this at one point where they're looking across the Hudson at Manhattan from New Jersey, and there's this giant. It just looks like a gumball machine with teeth, and it's like 40 stories high, and it's just the kind of monster. Ryan Ottley and James Herron have a sketch blog that is updated sometimes, and they just basically draw monsters.
And they're fun to draw.
Oh God, they're so good at it. And he does this huge action so incredibly well. He's one of my favorite artists, but I tend to forget about him because I only see his work sporadically. You know, the great thing about BBRD is that it's always attracted really great sequential artists and guys who can kind of have fun and draw monsters and action and you know, all sorts of stuff moving around. You have to do it really clearly because there's usually a lot of chaos going on. So in this, there's cars piled up everywhere and like, you know, the monsters sort of pop out of nowhere. He's got to do those beats where you're surprising the audience who's reading, which is, we've said lots, it's not easy on a comic book page to do. But it's just super impressive. It's just a good, fun package on a week where I read good books, but nothing that really stood out. And I just thought, this is good. We haven't talked about BPRD in a while. I haven't really been enjoying it all that much lately.
That's why I'm happy this was the pick, because you hadn't been enjoying it.
Yeah, and I really did enjoy it.
One of your favorite books historically.
Yeah, I think that it was. It's one of those things. You know, when Robin died, you know, when Damian died, like it was like, ugh.
We're going to have a month of this now.
It was more than a month. It would have been like 6 months of eulogies. And that's what this book has felt like for a year plus. And I think they were just like, you know what, let's just, now that Abe's gone, we need something. And they brought back Liz. And she's not moping or worrying about herself. She's taken over and being that sort of really cool, strong character that they spent so long building her up to be. And it created a center for the book that I think had been missing. And then you add in the artist who I just love. And it really was a great issue. And sort of at the end of it, like, yeah, and I can't wait to read the rest of this arc.
Well, she's going to have her shit together until she hears about Robin.
Yeah. Well, she's barely holding it together.
All new X-Men 21. We didn't talk about the last issue, so my first comment has a little to do with both. It's that I think one of the smartest ideas Bendis has had lately is that he had young Cyclops, and this is the book about the time-traveled young team. Young Cyclops kind of fall for the clone of Wolverine, which is weird and creepy because, you know, old Cyclops hates Wolverine so damn much. So the idea
Does
that young
he?
Cyclops and X-23 he's falling for her anyway. I thought it was a little delicious little twist in this whole thing.
Delicious.
Tales of ribaldry.
I grew in those little mustaches, so I have to say delicious.
See, Jim, this is a new bold era. I don't believe you've been on the show since we've all been reading all X-Men books.
No, like, I have not.
You even know what to do with yourself.
I'm usually the contrarian. I don't know what's going on.
Exactly, yeah. That's definitely true. And you were in luck this week because every book with an X in it came out at the same goddamn time.
Yeah, I actually only read all new X-Men. So,
because Uncanny was great. But
it was. That's actually not really good. I love this. The fact that this is a flashback to X-Men: God, Love, Man, Kills, and they got the original artist Brent Anderson to do the little flashback sequence was wonderful.
Was that surprise blew my brain out the back of my 35-year-old skull. Yeah.
I thought that was just Brandon Peterson doing a different style.
No, it's Brent Anderson. Oh, if you look at the front.
I like that first part the best. That's what I was thinking.
Brent Anderson with James Campbell on flashback art, and he was the original artist. I don't know if James Campbell was the original ink or not, but because the style looks not like Astro City, but it looks like God Loves, Man Kills.
Yeah. No, I thought they were just aping a style from the time. I don't think I realized that. Now, is that story – I've never read that. Is that story based on religious extremists?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. the Reverend Stryker. That whole thing is based on religious extremism. That's also the one where, if I'm not mistaken, Kitty gets to drop the N-word for the first and only time in Marvel Comics history.
Under what context?
Somebody is using racial slurs about mutants, and she was like, oh, yeah, you, what if I called you? And then everyone cringes.
That's Claremont.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Duh.
But this book continues to be great, just the awful uniforms aside. There was a couple times where I couldn't tell who I was looking at because of the stupid uniforms, but...
Yeah.
That's a good point. It was the uniform's fault. I was like, there were a couple of times when I was like, who is this? But I didn't think to blame it on the design.
They have the color differences, but because the whole thing takes place in this, like, pipe basement, the colors are all washed out even more, right. So you can't see the difference between...
But for me, it was. I think they put X-23 in a similar uniform, so I didn't know if it was her or Jean I was looking at. And
right. Yep. For me, it took me a while to realize they had duct taped Scott's glasses to his face.
Right.
I was like, what am I? What is that? Thank goodness for smart panel view.
By the way, if you sweat, then that doesn't work.
That's right.
Well,
I like that they're tying in the events of Avengers Arena into this without hitting you over the head with it.
Now, has that... I feel like I missed something because the thing about it being broadcast all over the world, did we know that? Had I heard that anywhere?
I think it was in the very end. It wasn't the very last issue of Avengers Arena.
I remember him like sort of alluding to it or saying it, but not expressly.
He had uploaded it to YouTube or whatever they call it on the Marvel Universe.
Right.
You know, QTube or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was broadcast live. That's one of those no prize situations. But
Either
way, everyone apparently saw it. That was the implication of the last page of Avengers Arena. Was that everybody was going to watch it?
Yeah. I don't know if it was so explicit, but yeah, I'd have to reread.
Josh, it was in between the lines. You had to use your brain.
I can't believe they didn't do an issue of like Arena Media Aftermath.
Right, Frontline Avengers Arena.
Exactly.
Thank you.
But this book continues to be really fun, and I really like these characters. I like that they are still here. I loved, it wasn't this issue, was it? Or was it the other one, where they have the argument over the... implication of killing these kids? Was that the last
one? That was at the beginning of this one. Yeah,
that was fantastic.
The purifiers were like, wait a minute. I didn't... What if I'm not born because I shoot this dude? Yeah.
I think you can tell Bendis is having a lot of fun writing these characters in this book.
He is. And it's interesting. Do you think, and I know that this is sort of based on a thing that was done before, do you think in today's political climate, is it a specific... I feel like it's a pretty bold choice to just make the Bible thumpers, the full-on bad guys.
Well, if you're going to go ahead and quote the actual Bible, certainly...
This is what I'm getting at.
He's not making that up.
It's the legacy.
Quentin Tarantino.
It's the legacy of this particular character. If you go back to the flashback, that's what... You know, it was the whole idea of they were trying to drive out the mutants because they were unnatural and everything.
But it's not hard to draw a line.
Sure.
Between real events. No. And I feel like...
The people who are quoting the Bible as we speak.
Yeah, I feel like... Yeah. Which is fine. I'm happy with it, which I just find kind of bold for what is basically Disney at this point, because they're calling out, you know, and I can't help but think this is a little more charged and polarized today than it was even then. So,
oh, yeah, definitely. Like, if you look at what happened when Ed Brubaker just alluded to...
Or Ed Brooker, as we...
Yeah, Ed Brooker.
If you don't run here, yeah.
Yeah. When he just alluded to the Tea Party with a couple of picket signs in an issue of
Captain America. This is what I'm getting
at. Yeah, things have ramped up politically like tenfold since then. So for Bendis to be like, this is explicitly what I'm talking about is...
Well, it's a little easier when it's not a specific real world group, and it's a group called the Purifiers, and they're not real, and they're all
dressed like they're in Halo, and,
right? Yeah. So it's a little easier to draw that distinction between that. But.
Do you know how you guys hate gay people? It's like that.
Now, Jim, you being on means we get to talk about books we don't normally talk about. One of which being Superior Spider-Man 25.
The minute you asked me, the minute you asked me to join you this week, I wrote on a piece of paper, "Spider-Man, it's up to you." And
are we talking about it because it was good or because you get a chance to talk about it?
It was good. It is good in the way that it has been good for a good long time.
Have you been consistently happy? Is this the longest run of Spider-Man that you've been happy with for a long time?
I have. If you look through the iFanboy archives, I have been consistently happy with Spider-Man throughout, ever since Brand New Day. When they undid his marriage, I was the one who wrote the article about how delighted I was and how everyone who was angry could suck me off. And this and this is no different. If you, for those of you who want to follow along at home, just go to the iFanboy server and type in inferior Spider-Fan. I am a big booster of Dan Slott and what he's been doing lately by putting Doc Ock in Peter Parker's body, partially because it is so outside the norm, and he's filled it with, like, every time you think he's going to get caught, he weasels out of it, and every time you think he's weaseled out of it, people are on to him, and on. It's just, it has been delicious.
Has it really only been 2 years of this? It feels like it's been so much longer.
You know, I was thinking this.
That's a long time.
When we were talking about BPRD, I was thinking about this. Like, when I was a kid, you knew by the issue number how many months something had been happening. Like, BPRD would be almost 10 years old, judging from the fact that it's on 115. But in this day and age, you really can't tell because sometimes it goes months without publishing. Other times it does 16 issues a year or whatever. So, yeah, I have no idea. But it has, I guess it's been roughly 2 years since that happened. And people are still freaking out.
That's as long as Captain America was dead.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. That's makes it kind of impressive.
Peter's coming back in a few months. So they
yes, we already
I guess
know
2
that.
Years is the moratorium on deaths. Now, so where are we at the story at this point, Jim? What's happening?
Where we are at the story in this point is Doc Ock has, in this issue, taken the Venom symbiote from Flash Thompson and has become the superior Venom. And all of his base impulses are being fed into by the symbiote. So he decides it's finally time to murder all the Avengers and take over New York City or what have you. And then there's a big catastrophic fight. And then when they defeat him, he sees it as an opportunity to say, oh, this is my chance to explain why I've been a dick all this time and they don't understand why I'm acting different than Peter. And so he goes, oh, thank God you saved me, Avengers. I had symbiote particles in my brain this whole time since the last time I faced Venom and you saved me and all this. And so you keep thinking, oh, he's weaseled out of it. Oh, he's going to be the same. And then they cut to the Avengers headquarters and they're like, no, he's not fooling anybody. He's full of shit. It's time for us to come take him in. And then meanwhile, there's this whole war between the Green Goblin and the Hobgoblin and all his acolytes, and it's all sort of coming to a head. Oh, and the most important part for people who stopped reading it and started sending angry letters every 3 weeks to Dan Slott in the interim, Peter Parker has been buried either in the symbiote or in the brain of his old body this whole time and has finally reasserted himself. And so now he's starting to think about ways to kick Doc Ock out.
So we've reached the final corner of this race, and we're heading towards
we are headed towards the finish line. Absolutely. So people who stopped reading it and then wrote a letter every month 25
come
issues
back
ago.
In.
Exactly. Now's the time.
Does Dr. Octopus then, cuz I haven't really been following along. I've read some of the team up issues and things like that. When this is over, this is really more of a prediction thing. When this is over, is he gonna go back to being a bad guy, or is he gonna be a new kind of character?
Bull-cutted, dumpy.
Well, his body's gone, right? Yeah. His body's dead.
His body is long dead. I have no idea what happens.
Like, well, okay. So when he comes back 2 years after this,
when they come
dead.
Back and hit the cosmic wacky button and bring the body back, and the...
I guess that makes him
bad. It seems to me that Dr. Octopus died before the last time I stopped reading comics in like 1991. Mm-hmm.
I think he comes back as a villain because you've done this story. He's going to be mad. He's got kicked out of the body.
Yeah, but then you have the story available of you know, he's going to try to make things right under his own name. And,
sure.
You know,
I see it as a reason why you turn bad again. You know, he's been, you know, he's no longer the hero. He's sort of embarrassed. What is the sort of impetus to most villainy? It's, you know, inadequacy, jealousy of the hero, that kind of thing.
It doesn't. Yeah, I guess it doesn't take much. I forget you guys are not regular readers of this. Like, his Otto's journey, and I can't believe those words. But his journey has been like he's been in Peter's body, and then he spent a while going, oh my God, Peter Parker is a moron. How do you not – like, so he decides he's going to be a better Peter than Peter ever was. But in the midst of it, he finds like, wow, this is actually kind of cool.
Right. No, and I made it that far, and I've read that kind of stuff. But is it all ego-based, or is he –
A lot of it is ego-based, but he's also formed relationships. Like he started an affair with his fellow grad student, and he's
going to be a lot of awkward conversations in a few months. Yeah, all the shakes out. And also, he knows Peter's identity now.
That he does.
He has to die.
He's going to have to die.
That's one continuity hiccup I forgot about until this fight with Venom, which is like, doesn't the symbiote remember all of this? Like, why does Flash Thompson not know what's going on? He does not know. Flash Thompson has never known Spider-Man's identity except, I guess, during that Civil War hiccup.
When everybody knew, yeah.
Yeah. But,
he's been busy driving around in a van having cool adventures, Flash. We're going to talk about that later.
We are, right? Good.
Yes.
We should.
So now, what is this next book, Jim?
Welcome to Jim Corner. Everyone settled. The Illegitimates is a book written by Mark Andreyko and Taron Killam.
This is issue two.
From Saturday Night Live. Yeah, this is issue two.
Oh, right. Taron Killam's book. Right.
He's a Saturday Night Live cast guy. The premise of this one.
Who's publishing this?
I want to say IDW, but don't quote me. It might be Boom. It's one of those guys. All Maybe right. Only. Anyway. Comixology is publishing it, as far as I'm concerned. But when you don't work here anymore,
IDW,
you don't have to worry about shit like that. But the premise of it is basically that while James Bond was on all of those adventures, screwing all of those femme fatales, a lot of those femme fatales got knocked up, so as a result, there are a lot of illegitimate James Bond babies running around. And the CIA and MI5 have been grooming them since birth surreptitiously for the day when James Bond is killed in action, which eventually happens. And so they now have all these 20-something offspring of this super secret agent that they must pull in from the cold and cultivate to tackle his greatest foe, the people who killed him. And that's the premise in a nutshell, and it's pretty great. Like, one of them is a professional MMA fighter. One of them is a secretary who works in the office, like Moneypenny. One of them is a revolutionary. One of them is a super gearhead who's drifting in Tokyo, blah, blah, blah. And it's a fun series. It's pretty clever. For some reason, when I read that the bad guys in this situation were a nefarious, sinister concrete company, I laughed until I thought I would die. It was like, they are the ones who concreted in Chernobyl. They gave the concrete that built the Berlin Wall. And I was like, oh, funny ideas are still possible in a world where everything has been written already.
So is this a mini, or is this an ongoing?
I think it's an ongoing, but at least every time, I always get this wrong. I think it's an ongoing. But yeah, it's pretty clever so far. The kids just found out who they are in this issue. They're not inclined to believe it. But then when 90% of them ignore the request to join the team and return home, they find out their moms have been kidnapped by the bad guy. And so they dive right back in. And what happens next, who knows? But yeah, so far it's been clever and inventive and pretty great. So
it's no Animal 5.
It's no Velvet, but I love it. Yeah, I never did read Dynamo 5, but you're right. From what I remember.
That's an interesting concept, though. You figure if James Bond at least wasn't impotent, there would have been at least a couple of little things running around.
I assume that he just got...
Not impotent, but sterile is what I meant.
And for what it's worth, a lot of the ladies that he boned down with were pretty badass in their own right.
Right.
To use the clinical term.
Xena Onatopp.
Right.
Superman, Wonder Woman, number 4, and this was, I liked this a lot for a couple of reasons. One, I really liked the art. I don't want to say the backup, because it's sort of like half the issue. It was two stories in this issue. I liked the art a lot. I also liked the backup was my favorite part. It was the sort of fallout of the world finding out, which is what the cliffhanger in the last issue was, that the world had found out that Superman, Wonder Woman are dating via Clark's own dumbly named website.
I'm going to go ahead and say Clark Catropoulos.
Right. And the first part of this issue was a fight with Zod, which I thought was actually kind of fun and inventive in the way that Zod tricked Clark and
I like that. I liked it a lot.
Yes. How many people were killed?
None so far, but the fight's only just begun.
Fingers crossed.
But Yeah, no, I like the idea that it wasn't actually, you know, cells that he thought he was keeping these things in, but shipping containers. And Zsasz just opened it, which was cool. But I liked the second part a lot. I liked the idea of...
Because he didn't change the default password.
Yeah, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or it was password. It was one of those two.
It's weird because I have the same on my... Anyway.
my bank password is password. So, but I like the hero's reaction. I liked all this. I mean, if you're going to do this relationship, then really do it and explore why it's kind of scary to everyone else. You know, what if they have a kid? What if she dumps him, breaks his heart, and he gets mad? Like, you know, there's all kinds of things to worry about.
Well, what's funny is that this doesn't have to focus on the adventures and the fighting so much. I mean, they're putting a little bit in, but really is...
It's a drama. Like, it's a romance.
It's like spending time with these characters. Like, what does Wonder Woman do when she's frustrated? Oh, she goes to her friend's gym and they fight.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. And as far as the character side, we don't get to see this very much. And I know in the beginning, I think we had Mike Romo on for the first issue. Yeah. And he was apoplectic. It's getting pretty good.
No,
it's,
I think
it's the best Tony Daniel work I've seen in my life. You know, it's like it's working different way. I really liked. Who was the backup artist or the second half artist?
The second half artist.
Bat.
It's not Bat. Bat's an inker. Oh. I'm getting there. I'm scrolling.
It looks like
it's who is it? It doesn't say in the front.
It doesn't. Oh, it's Paulo. It's not gonna work here anymore.
But he's not in the title page. Oh, because he would be in the second title
page. Yeah, no, he's not. He's the beginning of the second one.
Foiled again by the internet.
Paulo Sequeira.
Yeah, no, I thought he was really good. And, you know, I like the idea that this throws Lex Luthor's plans into complete disarray, and he's got to basically check out and start calculating again. I mean, everything about this was interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't really love the first issue either, but this has really grown to me very quickly.
Yeah, there's a lot of thought going into it, and like, regardless of the fact of whether you like or don't like the idea of Superman and Wonder Woman together, I mean, listen, this was very likely a thing that was handed down, and they say, you know, they said to Charles Soule, "What can you do with this?" And he's like, "All right, I'll do this." And it feels like he's doing a thoughtful story about that. If this was the reality, which it is,
right.
I don't think you can fault that.
He also is doing a good Superman story. I mean, the first part is not a Superman Wonder Woman story. Basically, it's Superman's Zod fight, and it was really good.
Yeah.
So if you're a Superman fan, I thought it was a great sequence.
Word.
iFanboy.com/Amazon is where you can go for your Amazon purchases, whether that's groceries or George Foreman grills or flying drones. Can you buy those? Can
yeah,
you buy you a flying drone and have a flying drone deliver that flying drone?
You could. You could buy one of those helicopter things to which you could attach something like one of those action cameras.
All right. Cool.
You could take. You could have your own crank shots. Yeah, GoPros. I have a Sony action cam, but
did
whatever.
Did you notice the drone shot on the first episode of Comedians in Cars Drinking Coffee, the latest
one? I did. And I immediately was like, oh, they got one of those things. About $500.
Oh, yeah.
You saw
I was going to say I'll have to look for it, but yeah, I did.
It's amazing that they can do that now for like no money. Well, it used to be whenever you see a helicopter shot and something like, oh, they spent some cash on this, and now it's all changed.
Yep. So go, if you're making a purchase on Amazon, go to iFanboy.com/Amazon. Use that link to go to Amazon. We get a little piece of the profits from them.
Oldest man thing I've said today, by the way.
And
now it's all changed. I remember when this was all cornfields.
Help the show out if you can. Also, iFanboy.com/registration is where you can become a member. $3 a month or $30 a year. Helps us directly. Helps us keep the lights on, pay for the equipment, do all kinds of stuff. And we thank you for it. Now let's talk about what we mentioned before, Thunderbolts number 20. Now.
I am so excited to hear about this.
The road trip continues.
Have you been reading Thunderbolts?
No, but since I left you all, I have subscribed to Marvel Unlimited, the app, which is fucking amazing. And part of that is you basically, for those of you who are not have never heard of this before, you pay $6 or $7 a month and get every issue as it comes out 6 months later. And so I just got to the first issue of Thunderbolts that Daniel Way did not write. But I haven't read it yet. And so I'm waiting to hear from you guys whether this is a worthy endeavor or not, basically.
Well, we've
clearly someone hasn't been listening to the show because we talked about all the issues.
Yes.
Well, if you're just listening to them 6 months later, that's fair.
That's fine, too. We'll take that.
I'm not that far behind.
I mean, Josh and Paul really talked this up. It got me on board. I went back and I got all the back issues and read them in a row. And I've been on it for the last couple of issues. This has been a great series. And this issue, they find a new base. They find old decommissioned Thunderbolt Ross base, and they go down there to plan their next mission, which is, you know, each member of the team gets their own special mission. In this issue, they decide they need to help. They need Ghost Rider's help because it involves spells and sending somebody to hell, and it blows up in their face.
And I think that the thing that we're seeing about the Soul's work is that, and it is on several series now, is that it starts off.
He wrote the exact last book that we just talked about.
Yes. Oh yeah, well, this is one of those things that happens in comics when certain writers who write a lot of books, and by the way, he has 7 ongoing books,
right,
and a law practice.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah. Anyway, with all of the books that we've talked about, he starts off in the beginning is pretty good.
Yeah.
And then they've all gotten consistently better.
Well, he's improving. You can see it.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
I liked his stuff for a while, but he's getting much better, which is good because he's started off as a good writer.
Yeah, and he's 7 ongoings and a law practice.
Is it thriving?
I managed to both order breakfast and get to work only 15 minutes late today.
He's an impressive guy, is what I'm telling you.
But if you're a Ghost Rider fan, in this issue, Danny Ketch sort of, I don't know if he's going to join the team permanently or what, but he's here to help, and they're going to finally rid themselves of this Mercy problem by sending her to hell, but it doesn't go the way you think it goes because they're the Thunderbolts.
Mercy?
Was it Mercy, Josh?
Yeah, Mercy.
She's basically, she killed... what I'm asking is, that sounds like the name of a Peter David Hulk villain from like 1988. And
you're on your own there.
Could be.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll say
might
yes.
Be good enough.
That would make sense.
The leader's in it and the Hulk, Red Hulk's in it.
Red leader.
Could be. Red leader. I'm sorry.
Red snot, red snot face blood.
Ghosted.
Yellow leader. Ghosted number 6. I actually, for some reason, I thought that Ghosted was a miniseries. Foolish me.
How wrong you were.
From Josh Williamson and Skybound Entertainment. The previous artist has been substituted with another artist for this arc, and the new artist is, you may remember, David Gianfelice, who I believe did some Scalped issues.
David with an E at the end.
Yeah.
I remember him.
Yeah. And a couple of other things in there. I like this art a lot more. The other artist wasn't bad. I can't remember his name for the life of me, but it's okay. But I really like the art on this. And basically, it is a heist movie with a haunted house ghost possession component. And they've found a reason for another caper that also has to do with, I don't know how long they can keep this up, but if you liked it, it's sort of a ghost caper of the, well, every 6 weeks or 6 months.
Is it,
that's
all
good
shot,
to know.
One shot issues.
No. The first one's a 5-issue mini, and then this is the start of the next. You know, like, you wronged us, and now you have to work for us. But there's a ghost involved, and there's a nice twist at the end with it.
I sort of fell off on this. I'm glad to hear that it's picking up steam.
Yeah. No. You know, it's one of those things. Like, a lot of times with the miniseries, you can get into it a little bit, but he had a ton of plot to get through last time. And it was pretty good. It wasn't the most amazing thing, but you know, now that he's going to know the characters better and get better at it, there's a really good chance that it'll sort of keep getting good. But I recommend, if you liked it or you fell off, like, it's going to keep going, and you know, check this out if it sounds like your thing.
I know that you guys, some of you read Nova because I totally still listen to this show.
Paul does.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, fine. But I like this issue particular and the last one a lot. Because it's Jerry Duggan, the guy from Deadpool, who I have not heard of previously.
Really?
Has I had not heard of him before.
Well, he didn't do a lot of comic work previous to.
No, I know.
But he's taken over this issue or this series, and he's done a great job. And I like the fact that Nova, he depicts a Nova who kind of gets. He's a kid. He gets easily manipulated. He gets tricked. Things are not what he thinks they are. He thinks he's doing good. He's not necessarily. Basically, last issue, he started seeing spots, and he came to find out that they were dots on a map. And when he started following the map to those dots, he realized each dot represented the helmet of a dead Nova, because he's one of the last ones left. So as he's going around trying to collect these Nova helmets, he is trying to help the people he finds, and not all of them are representing themselves accurately, and he's sort of helping the wrong people. And I think it's kind of nice the way that they show that without explicitly laying it out, he's inexperienced, but he's not always doing the right thing, even when he thinks he is. And he comes home thinking he had the best day ever, when in fact he helped slave ships and things like that. So yeah,
this is, these things happen.
Yeah, he's like 15, you know.
Who amongst us didn't make bad choices at 15?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, he's great. It's a good book.
Boring, but I mean that's my own thing.
Right.
Velvet 3. I don't want to say too much because we talked about the first two issues, but the more I read this and more we delve into this world, these characters, the more I like it. And I already liked it quite a bit.
It's really very good.
Yeah.
It's a very good book. And an interesting counterpoint to The Illegitimates, for those of you who've been following along at home. You know, sort of same playground, different game.
Yeah.
Foursquare versus merry-go-round.
I like the fact that it's a, you know, older protagonist. It's not, you know, young, sexy protagonist. She's in her 40s, which is not
You can tell from the streak in her hair.
I like the little touches of identifying people with circles around them. You know, so you knew sort of in her mind what she's doing. She's targeting these people with their information under them, which was like a cool visual representation. And the story in this one was pretty hardcore. I was even caught by the twist that happened. Didn't expect that particular outcome, but it's sort of a return to Queen of Country-esque kind of thing.
Yeah. I keep thinking that this is Rucka, but it isn't.
Yeah.
It's interesting how similar Brubaker and Rucka's sensibilities are.
Well, I guess.
Did they do Gotham Central
together? Yeah.
Central together. They wrote Batman at the same time, and they've always had a sort of very similar aesthetic, at least in these kind of stories or the superhero stories or whatever. But
I can remember reading Gotham Central not being able to tell which one was which.
Right, and which is impressive. And I think that they switched back and forth, and it was very, very seamless. You can kind of tell now, like as I read through the books a couple of years ago, they both have sort of different interests in sort of how they structure something. I guess it's a little bit, but the tone is pretty similar. For me, the story here is kind of that this is, I don't want to say this is the work of Epting's career, because the Captain America work was the work of Epting's career, but this is really good, and it's a stripped down version of even what he was doing on Captain America. But it's got such a style to it with these circular inset panels and just the way that he's given this book a... I love the storytelling. I love the action and the movement of it. He's gotten... It's very good. It all sort of works.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at this, it's just like a simple panel here of the agents searching the apartment, you know, as they're going through her place. They're putting so much information and so much stuff in that panel. And it's very good.
Now, if you recall, Josh, and listeners everywhere, Justice League 3000 number 2 came out, and we talked about the first one. Paul and I didn't quite know what to make of it. We didn't know if we liked it or didn't like it or what. And I still don't know for sure, but I think it's really interesting so far. If you don't know, it's the story of many thousands of years in the future. The clones of the Justice League have been unleashed onto the world to save the day. So they are physically the Justice League, but they don't. What is a clone? It's not the same exact person. They don't have the experience, so they aren't quite themselves, and they don't quite have all the power. So, like for instance, Superman, he has the memories of the old Superman. He remembers that he could fly, but he can't actually fly. So he keeps trying to fly as an instinct, and he keeps falling off of things, which is funny. It's good, and I like the idea of what is a clone, and what does that mean, and these are your heroes you know, but not really. And I like that last
for what it's worth, I've never heard one word about this series until you talked about it just now. And to me, it sounds like the most interesting DC series I've heard about in a long, long time.
Well, it's Giffen and DeMatteis writing it, and it's Howard
Porter. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Howard Porter drawing it. And
you've just converted one person.
So
right here now.
And if you don't like Superman, like I know you don't, Jim, you'll enjoy it because Superman is like the big dick jock on campus character. That's who because he sees himself.
Superman is the worst.
He sees himself as an alpha male, so he acts like it. And
this sounds great to me.
I don't quite understand the whole world and or what they are supposed to be doing, but I like the interplay of the characters and all that stuff. So
listen, I don't know what you got going on, but I like it, kid. It's got moxie.
Exactly. So Justice League 3000 so far, so still on it. It would have been really interesting to see if Kevin McGuire would have done with it as the original artist who was not drawing the book, but I like it. It's good. So those are the books of the week. It was a good week, I thought.
I just wish you would stop trying to justify the book. You like the book. Just like the book.
I like it. I love it. I'm on board for a little while. Anyway.
That's all right.
Let's answer some audience questions. We got some email here. The first is from Wes from Newport, Minnesota. And Wes says, I was wondering what your first quote-unquote mature comic was. By this, I mean what comic made you realize that comic books could be about something other than superheroes and could have a level of complexity to them. For example, Preacher was the first comic that made me realize that comics could deal with real ideas of faith, family, brotherhood, selfishness, obsession, honor, and sacrifice. Also vampires.
That too.
And meat puppets. So what was your guy's first mature comic that made you
I was thinking about this, and I think there are two issues. I think there are two things here. I think we're all going to have one answer that's the same and then another answer that's different.
Uh-oh.
Well, we're all about the same age. We all grew up reading comics.
Speak for yourself, old man.
Yeah, go to hell. He's older than me.
I'm not older than you.
I meant Jim is.
No, everybody knows.
7 months younger than you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I assume that The Dark Knight Returns would have been about the first book that you would have read and gone, oh. Maybe, Connor, you had no rules.
No, because I'm going to say no to that. I didn't realize that until I was older. I didn't realize what I was reading because as a kid.
Right, absolutely, that's true. But like at the time, you don't kind of know that.
It
stuff
didn't make
anyway.
Me realize. Oh, this is something. For me, it's just a really awesome Batman story when I was 10 years old reading it. I didn't realize the moral complexity going on until much. I was
the
able
Nazi
to really
boobs
understand.
didn't.
I was 10 years old.
How funny that you would mention the Nazi boobs. Because that is exactly the moment where I was like, oh, shit. Because, like, I was 11 or 12. And
you looked
I had,
over your shoulder and went, uh-oh.
Well, see, I had a friend who had issues 1 and 2. This is before the trades were even, like, or collections were even a thing because it was just out there. So I had a friend who had 1 and 2, and I had read them at his house. And then when I was on vacation that summer, I had my mom and dad – because vacation that summer was so boring, stop at a comic book store and they bought me issue 3. And when I opened it and I saw the Nazi boobs, I was like, no one in this car realizes what it is I'm reading. I'm a grown man now. And to this day, I sometimes think now that I have kids, I'm like, nobody ever asked me what I was reading, that was the big one, superhero category for me, followed closely by the Watchmen trade that I bought at Walden Books like a year later. But
I think I got Watchmen sometime around there too, but it, like Connor said, like at the time I didn't
appreciate what it was that I was reading.
No, and it's funny because it's true. Like, it felt like it was a little dirty, but it wasn't like it taught me anything because it was all pretty political, subversive stuff that
right,
I would have had no context.
Yeah, I mean, I got those Reagan, Reagan was the president, so I knew that. Right. But I didn't really
understand. Years later, when I read the dialogue between Robin's parents a second time, I was like, oh, Frank Miller is an arch conservative. I can't wait to see how this plays out.
He didn't know it then.
Right, exactly.
Now, I would come back to the other side. Say, what happened to me is I stopped reading comics and I came back for a little bit and I started reading superhero comics, mostly provided by Connor and his band of merry comics friends in college. But it wasn't until I sort of started going to the store and picking out my own stuff that I actually was like, that's when I discovered like Vertigo. And I was like, oh, these are comics that are actually made for adults. And my first one was it was Hellblazer 150, which was Brian Azzarello, Richard Corbin, in prison.
Yeah.
And that was – I didn't even know that that was a thing. And I was probably – I was 22 at the time, really. I don't know why I didn't – I was – I remember before that a friend of mine was reading Preacher and I thought –
You were a little younger than that because you made me buy the trade around that time from Jim Hayman's Universe. I remember that.
It would have been the first year I was in Los Angeles. It was after college.
Interesting.
And because I remember, but Tom had read Preacher all through college, and he read Sandman, and I didn't read them, and I didn't. Our friend Tom.
Tom's roommate.
Yeah. No.
We can talk about Tom. Let's talk about how he needs to manscape. For me,
let's not do that at all.
For me, assuming we're not talking about like cherry Pop-Tart.
No, I mean not roommate,
which my friend had down in the second floor of our building when I was a kid.
Do I know this friend?
No,
I'm not.
No,
you
never met him. Okay. Sin City, when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Was
that's
one
a good
that
one.
Made me realize, oh, this is.
That actually... was out when you were in high school?
92?
I think so. Yeah.
My chronology is all wrong. Yeah, I guess. Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, 92, I was in high school. So that's when it really.
I know that.
That's when
I can
really,
just go 92. Like, it's like people who know sports stats.
Really understood what was going on. Like, ooh, there's more going on here in comics than just. And that's, you know. And it wouldn't be until I read Batman post that I really got was you know Dark Knight Returns I really got what was going on. So that was really the gateway into adult comics.
See, I didn't leave superheroes on like knowingly until years later. Like Josh, I stopped, well, maybe not like Josh. I stopped reading comics proper for a decade. But while I was in college, at some point I read about comics. And in the course of that, like my junior year, I bought Mouse in the hardcover. And then that same year I read Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud in the library. And I think that part of that was that laid the groundwork for me going, oh, I wonder what has happened since I stopped. And
Funny, but you still stayed pretty, you've been pretty stalwart with this Marvel.
Well, like I never really left comics so much as they left me, because the 90s were what they were. And like, I would poke a toe in every once in a while, like somebody turned me on to Marvels in 94 or whatever it was. And like, I was dimly aware of the Clone Saga and stuff, but like, I didn't buy real comic books proper other than Star Trek versus X-Men, which is a modern day classic, for many years. But yeah, I did buy Mouse, and I wanted to be a comic book guy, but I didn't know the indie stuff was out there until sort of in retrospect, I guess.
Yeah. What's funny is that as soon as I say Hellblazer now, that led to maybe the best year or two of comic reading in my life.
Yeah, no, you had Powers and you had Transmetropolitan. And
Powers,
had
Lucifer, I started reading. You went back and read that other Bendis stuff. And then you know, he came out with the Marvel stuff, like the Alias. And
yeah,
like,
that was a great – when iFanboy spawned out of that year.
Oh, yeah, totally. And Warren Ellis is doing The Authority, and when Mark Miller's name was something that I didn't dread.
Right. He wasn't talking about rape as like it was a joke. Yeah.
Since come to believe that that is all not as horrible as it seems, because he's trying to make a point even though it's crassly done. I can give him that much credit.
I can get that. You can maybe you want to save that for a Talksplode or something, but like, yeah.
I'm
Alias,
not reading it again.
Right, exactly. Alias was the thing that seized me by the heart and brought me to your shores,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even at that time, like there was like Chris Ware and David Boring and I read Pedro and Me that during that period, and I read Mouse for the first time during that period, and there was so much.
That
it
was
the first
best,
time
the best year, I think.
Ugh.
For us, for you and me, Ron, for our whole group, like reading comics, because everything was new and exciting. That was the first time we were all
remember.
And we all had read
Sleeper
other
was
things.
Coming
I
out.
I read a lot of Dark Horse and stuff in high school, a lot of stuff like Grendel, things that weren't on the beaten path, but that was when we really sort of opened up the floodgates on stuff that wasn't normal, and as quote-unquote normal being like Batman, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that was really the year we really sort of started really exploring.
And to be fair, I think we were pretty late to the game. It's not like
Absolutely.
Vertigo's a new thing.
No.
We're pretty far into that. I hadn't been reading before that, but that was when I was like, oh, this is an art form. This has wings. This doesn't just have to be one thing.
Yeah, I mean I've been reading for that point eight years, mm-hmm. You know, non-traditional comics, but it wasn't really till then that I really sort of dived into it.
Yeah.
So that was it. So you'll take Sin City, Batman, Dark Knight Returns, and also for you, Jim, Batman Dark Knight Returns?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so
although you're saying at Hellblazer.
I was too young to read it, and everyone should be in jail who allowed me to read it, but
yeah, but it didn't, like, here's the thing. This is a parenting lesson to take, is that it didn't warp you in any way.
It didn't ruin me, no.
Because you didn't know what it was. It was over your head. I think
like, that's why my kids watch Pulp Fiction every day.
It's like when I showed my little sister JFK. She didn't know what was going on.
I remember being taken to Beverly Hills Cop at a far too young age.
I did too. I saw it in the theaters, and I was probably six.
Back when every movie had a strip club in it.
84. And believe me, that's the only thing I remember about it for years.
84. I also had we also owned the VHS, so I watched it a lot.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, let's do another email. Let's get one of those out before we run out of time here.
Adrian from Australia writes in, and over the last year, the bad behavior, and for me at least, abhorrent social values of some of the writers in the comics industry has been highlighted. While most of the time I can separate the actions of the writer and the stories they tell, some of it has been bad enough to make me drop books that I've enjoyed or not pick them up in the first place. I'm not asking you to name names. You really want me to, though. But have you ever faced this problem yourself? Now, this is the Ben Siever question that comes up every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm not going to explain that for those of you who are
you did that.
Younger than 30.
You're going to be pretty old to get the Ben Siever. The Ben Siever Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
I'll
Brad
be
Pitt.
Dead soon.
Brad Pitt conundrum. But I like this question because the answer is an evolving one for me over the years.
The answer is also going to be different for every single person.
Exactly. And for every person that person is judging. There have been rumors, I guess is really the best way to go, that have surfaced about some comic writers and artists and things over the years. Things come out because there is a Rhys Johnston. And editors, I think, of all sorts of stories, and some of them are true and some of them aren't and some of them we'll never know. And you wonder if they are a thing that affects your ability to read. And my answer is sometimes.
Okay.
The end.
Well,
next question.
I've met people I don't like, but I read their work.
Yeah. I've had people corner, like, there's an artist who is one of my favorites who he never introduced himself to me, but he cornered me and Allie at C2E2 one year at the bar and talked to us until I thought I was going to have to fake my own death. and when he
happened to me so many times.
Yeah. And he leaves and I'm like, Allie, who was that elderly moron? And she was like,
Ross.
Oh, right. She's, oh, he's your favorite person ever. And oh, that's okay, that's good. But so, yeah, I mean, you've been through it probably tenfold I have.
Connor sicked one of my favorite artists of all time on me, and I had the most awkward hour of my life in a bar.
I did, yeah. It was good.
Yeah. The next day, he saw me in the hallway, and he just goes, I'm sorry. this is totally not a name, but this is somebody whose work I have talked about to you people for years.
I had a great conversation with him.
I did too, but anyway, it went on for a while.
The point of getting back to the email, mostly because if I'm going to stop reading comics, then I'm going to have to stop watching every movie, every TV show, listening to every song ever written, going to museums and seeing Picasso's, and because almost every creative endeavor that you enjoy, there's a jerk behind it.
Was the John Lennon.
Yeah, and the thing is, and even, I mean, like, the stuff that's come out, it's not like, there have been no crimes. If a comic creator murdered or raped someone, that would be a different story. But then again, I like watching Chinatown. And I like watching O.J. Simpson and the Naked Gun.
So you probably liked Annie Hall at one point.
Well, that's a little muddy. Yeah. But, where's the line drawn? I like watching Jack Nicholson.
Well, I think that's where sometimes comes in. Because sometimes it can color it for whatever reason. Or it can get you going forward. Like, I can use this as an example. Ender's Game is one of my favorite books. One of my favorite series of books. I have read 8, 9 of those. I've read a bunch. I can't read them anymore. I won't go to the movie.
That's what everyone's lines are different.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't want to support that. There's been a recent story about one writer, and it's totally soured me on the work. I can't explain why, but
oh no, I get it. Yeah, and I mean, my advice to you as the writer of the email is this: what you need to do is quit the podcast that you've been working on, so that you don't have to read any of the news anymore. And then you find a big pit of sand, and you just take your head and you just squish it right in there. Mm-hmm. Just right all the way in there.
There is something to not reading about any of these people.
Yes. The day that I unfollowed everyone except Ryan Stegman on Twitter was one of the best days of my life, honestly, because it has changed everything. Like, Josh, you and Aubrey Sitterson were having a conversation about liberal people demonstrating their liberalness about comics on Twitter. I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about. This is glorious.
I actually didn't either.
Okay.
I've seen it so often that I was like, I understand.
That's fair.
I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah,
everyone's line's different. Everyone's thing's different. And to me, why would you deny yourself entertainment? I don't know. I think that the real thing is it's a very complicated. There's no clear cut answer. It's not black and white. You know.
No.
Crime. Keep getting Fear Agent Library Edition 2 pushback. There it is. Anyway.
There you go.
So if it makes you uncomfortable, you're not, and it colors your thing, then you shouldn't probably read it. But then where does that end? That's my question. Where does it end?
Right.
You know, I can guarantee you way worse things happen in behind the scenes of the things you watch on TV and movies. Way worse.
I've never watched an episode of The Sopranos.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost done with that Beatles book, and doesn't make me love the music any less.
That's no. right.
So if you have an email, emails at contact@ifanboy.com and call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697 to leave a voicemail. Tell us your name, where you're from. Keep it to 30 seconds.
This is normally the part when Paul just talks about all the other interesting things he's doing. Made him too busy to do the show this week, I guess. but I'll try to fill in. There will be a Talksplode from me coming up. By the way, Jim, originator of the Talksplode right there, he gets no royalties. But
oh, that's right, yeah.
Neither do we, so it's fine. I will be talking to Joe Mulvey and Charles Soule, who we've been talking about.
Hey.
We're going to talk about we're going to talk a little bit about how you do seven ongoing movies. Series. And a
career. If his clients are satisfied with his level of attention.
Right. I know he has a family. He's got a daughter. He's married. I mean, he's got a real life. Well, dude jogs regularly.
He just posted a very popular blog about how he time manages.
And I found it really interesting. And I've talked to him about this for a while. Actually, I think the last Talksplode I had with him was a year ago. And then Joe Mulvey is the creator of a book called Scam. Working with Comics Tribe, and he is working. This is going to be vaguely self-serving. He's putting out an anthology called The Scamthology. I have a story in that, so I'm actually going to be talking with other comic creators as a comic creator myself, because I've got a story in there. And but we're not. I'm not going to. It's not a whole shill fest. That's just how it's connected.
You're talking about your e-novel as well.
My e-novel, yeah. I got $7 from Germany last year.
One of my favorite purchases in years.
There you go.
Do we talk about Paul's Booksplode? Are we on?
Yeah, and yet? Paul will be having a Booksplode on Akira by Katsuhiro Otomo. I believe Scotty Young will be guesting on that in the near future as well. So look out for that. If I'm you, I'm going to go out and get the Akira books and read.
Well, they're great. They're also great books.
They're great books. We never talk about them. I haven't read it for a really long time, but they're great, great
I've read
books.
Akira probably since early high school.
Yeah, I read it. I read it at some point in
but
the
I
20s.
Can still picture sequences in my head. That's how great that book was. Yeah.
Speed lines, man. Yeah. Speed lines.
Head over to fanboy.com.
For that.
Yeah, look for those shows. Head over to fanboy.com. You'll find those shows there. When they come out, you'll find this show. You can go there, comment on the what we said in this show, and also tell us what you thought of this week's books. And you can find all of our other shows there going back. I just went through the last week and looked at a bunch of our old stuff. It's all still there. You can still find it. If you've never seen the old video shows, they're still there. The old iFanboy minis are all still there. You can see us. A good 30 pounds lighter.
That's right.
Collectively?
I was recently talking to someone about the history of Ant-Man, and when I Googled it, the first thing I found was, "What's wrong with you? The Hank Pym problem," which was a comment fest I had not thought about in a long, long time.
Now, Josh, collectively, we're probably down a person. Or up
a small person, but a person nonetheless.
I saw an old mini of me wearing a t-shirt I cannot wear anymore. And I was like, oh, I got really sad for a long time. Follow us, and if you go to twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy, you can follow us there and you can learn what the pick of the week is and find out when the shows come out.
Jim, you want to handle the next bit?
What is the next bit? Maybe I put my script down. You're not my
email?
Judge. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 1-888-326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, manifestos, recipes, etc.
Awesome. And if you like us, you can leave a review in iTunes for any of our shows because we got to be up there now. I really want that number to be stupid. I like the idea. I mean, who's going to argue with 1,000 reviews where you average 5 stars?
Right.
That's pretty good. And I want the, you know, I'm megalomaniacal enough. That's what losers do. They lost. They quit. They can't say anything. Oh, we started another show. It's 1,000 reviews averaging 5 stars. You can't juke those stats. That's what I'm saying. Even better than that, go and do that. Just if there's a show you liked or you want to pass a link around or tell other people about the podcast on your various social networks or something you really liked, we always appreciate that. That really helps. And we thank everybody who shares what we do.
Look forward, my Facebook friends, to getting a link to this, even if you've never read comics in your life this week.
Well, that'll be exciting for everyone.
It'll say, "I am still relevant," link. Etc.
It's basically all that Facebook is.
I exist. Yeah, that's fine.
Validate me.
Well, thank you, Jim, for coming on as Paul does whatever he's doing mysteriously.
It is my pleasure anytime.
Pennsylvania. But thanks for coming on, and thank you for listening, everyone. And until next week, I'm Connor.
I am Jim.
I am Joshua.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very important.
It sounded biblical there, didn't I?
Yeah. That's Christ's real name, you know.
No shit.
Yeah.
Bye.
I went down Virginia seeking shelter from the storm. Caught up in the fable, I watched the tower grow. Five-year plans and new deals wrapped in golden chain. And I wonder who'll stop the rain.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.